Hello, and welcome to the forum, where science comes to socialize. I'm Barbara, and as always, I'm here with Aubrey and Cleo, my co-hosts.
We're not only here, though, we're also on social media. In fact, it's safe to assume we're always on social media.
If you'd like to join us there, you can check out our Twitter, at ISGPForum, and tweet us using the hashtag ISGPForum. You can also find us on Facebook at ISGPTheForum.
Today we're headed to good old London, UK, to talk about the Institute on Science for Global Policies conference held at the House of Lords called Science and Governance, Focus on the Genomic Revolution.
Which, whenever I hear that title, I always imagine armies of DNA strains rising up in resistance.
But what are they resisting?
That's a good question. Ask them.
I was going to chastise you guys for getting off topic, but we are talking about DNA today. And this topic has been known to cause some warlike tendencies.
That's because today we're going back to the topic of genetically engineered food, or GE food. To hear some past talks on the subject, check out episodes 5 and 9 of the forum.
And, just like last time, our conversation will be cool, calm, and collected, the three C's of GE, so to speak.
We'll be specifically talking about the paper, Genomic Sciences for Agriculture, Food, and Nutrition, by Dr. Roger Beachy, and the corresponding debate that occurred.
Dr. Beachy is a professor of biology at Washington University in St. Louis, Missouri. He's also the executive director of the Global Institute for Food Security at the University of Saskatchewan in Canada. As always, you can find this paper online under the Publications tab of our website.
To begin, let's zoom out to the big picture of food insecurity. Many organizations, like the Food and Agricultural Organization, or FAO, have projected that by 2050, with population increases and many other variables, the world will need to produce 70% more food to feed everyone.
This might seem doable to some, but with unsustainable farming practices, changing climate in areas of the world where crops are grown, and the loss of arable land due to development, we will need to produce more food with fewer resources.
Not only that, but countries are becoming less likely to share their extra food with less food-secure countries because of the growing uncertainty that food availability will remain constant.
And unfortunately, food insecurity has only increased since 2008, not decreased.
Dr. Beachy believes that a part of this problem is preventable because there is a wealth of relevant information out there that is currently not being used at all.
Specifically, Dr. Beachy is referring to genetic technology, like genetic engineering.
He sees genetic technology as an important tool that can be used alongside other appropriate tools in fighting food insecurity.
An understanding of crop genomes has led to better practices in traditional breeding, because the plant breeder knows what genes they need to use to achieve the traits they want. This speeds up the breeding process, but sometimes even that might not be enough. This is why Dr. Beachy recommends genetic engineering.
He states that there are many benefits to using our knowledge of genomic sciences in agriculture. This includes increased tolerance against drought and heat, crops that use chemical fertilizers more efficiently, and crops that are resistant to disease, insects, and parasites.
All of which are the scourges of food security.
Exactly. And not only can the crops be resistant to drought, pests, and the like, but GE crops could produce higher yields, meaning more food on the table.
But wait, there's more. GE crops can provide key nutrients to those who are food insecure and suffer from a lack of access to micronutrients.
Dr. Beachy mentions that there are a lot of possibilities in that area, including increasing the amount of nutrients in a food, altering the food so it contains more healthy oils, like those omega-3 fatty acids you hear so much about, foods that contain fewer allergens like gluten, and foods that contain less mycotoxins, which are cancer-causing.
Woohoo! Engineered gluten-free foods? As the resident gluten-free individual on the ISGP staff, I wholeheartedly approve of this idea.
You and your sad, sad gluten-free life.
Don't patronize me.
Well then, both GE crops and animals have the possibility of being better for the environment than their parents. GE animals, for example the new GE salmon, use less feed and result in the production of lower amounts of greenhouse gases and other pollutants.
Okay, this all sounds well and dandy, but I think we need to take a step back from all these positives and look at the negatives brought up in both the debate and Dr. Beachy's paper.
Agreed.
Dr. Beachy believes that a reason why we've seen such a lag in preventing food insecurity is because while there has been a great deal of scientific progress in crop development during the past decade, there's not enough fundamental research going on that could actually help achieve food security.
And this fundamental issue comes from one root problem, funds, or lack thereof.
Fundamental funds. I see what you did there.
Even with her terrible pun,
hey.
Cleo is still right. Funding is a major issue. Dr. Beachy pointed out that in recent studies, both the U.S. and U.K. have witnessed funding in basic research for crop development rest at a standstill, or worse, declining. Studies suggest that the lack of progress in increasing the yields of wheat, barley, soya, and other staple crops is due to this decrease.
It was also recognized that there is a lack of investment in basic research for food and agriculture. In fact, they gave us a number to show just how low these investments are. Any guesses from my fellow co-hosts?
11%? 5%?
Gosh, you guys weren't even close. The farm gate value of these investments, or the net value of the product when it leaves the farm, is just 0.03%.
That's not even a whole number.
No, it's in fact 0.03 of a number.
For our listeners out there, you should know that I am currently glaring at Barbara.
Stepping back from the sass, the debaters thought that the support of science in an industry, specifically agriculture, needs to be correlated with the value of the industry as a whole.
Increased attention to the science of agriculture could, in turn, bring more talent into the industry.
And I am 110% all for having more scientists and researchers.
Now who isn't using legit numbers?
Well played.
Not to bring the mood down, but there are a lot more problems in this conversation besides funding.
Boo, and here I was thinking that all of our problems could be solved by throwing more money at agriculturalists.
Make it rain.
Oh my goodness. In addition to this lack of funding, the translation of scientists' understanding of the genome into consumer and environmental benefits is much slower than necessary. This is mostly due to the fact that regulation for genetically engineered crops is incredibly complex and expensive.
Regulation of GE crops varies from country to country. In the US, for example, regulating agencies purposefully made regulations for GE crops complex to ward off potential negative consequences from the, at the time, brand new technology. Other countries have regulations that are different from those in the US, but are still complicated. These regulations inhibit the importation of GE products and make it very hard for farmers and other producers to access these genomic advances.
These regulations actually restrict GE technology so much that they can become harmful. They favor big agriculture, or big ag companies, over small farmers and universities. And because of this, much of the research into GE crops has targeted cash crops and food crops that bring in big money, like corn, and not things like vegetables and fruits, which tend to bring in less money. According to the debaters, approximately half of the global expenditure on research in the food and agricultural sector comes from the private sector.
How long have these regulations been in place?
Since 1987, actually.
Hasn't a lot changed since 1987?
You mean besides the lack of shoulder pads, perms, and the addition of that newfangled World Wide Web?
Yes, besides that.
In terms of our understanding of the genome, yes, quite a bit has changed. These regulations were actually created with the recognition that as our understanding of genetic engineering improved, we could reduce the hoops that these new technologies would need to jump through.
But that obviously hasn't happened. So what's the holdup?
A big part of it has to do with consumer acceptance.
Acceptance of GE crops varies widely between the 29 countries that produce GE crops. These differences in opinion are reflected in current trade negotiations, like the ones between the US and the EU. The EU is less sure about the safety of GE crops and has strict trade restrictions against them.
But didn't the EU conduct that massive study on GE crops and came to the conclusion that they were safe? I'm a little confused by the mixed signals.
Yes, they did, and yes, it is.
The debaters felt that there needs to be a global harmonization of the regulations for GE crops.
Although these countries might have differing views, and hence differing sets of regulatory requirements, a global harmonization could build upon established practices that are considered safe.
While the food products have been proven to be safe for consumption and safe for the environment, the guidelines, especially in view of rapidly emerging technological advances, must remain flexible and maintain global sensitivity, bearing in mind the different perspectives on GE crop safety.
This global harmonization is, of course, more important for the 29 countries that produce GE crops. This could lead to an opportunity for these countries to share information and help craft the guidelines together.
But we shouldn't leave the countries that import these goods out of the equation. The debaters also added that in this global harmonization scheme, importing countries should identify problems that they have so that they can also be addressed.
All in all, this sounds like a great idea, but I do see one major flaw. How can we expect all these countries to work in harmony if the public cannot and does not agree on the subject?
True. Public perception does shape how the governments react to GE crop regulation. Take the EU, for example.
Since this debate took place in the UK, it's important to ask, how does the British public feel about GE technology?
The debaters stated that the UK doesn't differ in thought too much from the rest of the EU. Public perception is that GE crops are harmful. While many studies have proven that GE crops are not detrimental to human health, distrust abounds.
At its heart, the problem stems from the media reports as well as the lack of public education on the topic. But the distrust also comes from the variety of other issues, like distrust in multinational firms.
And that could be understandable, since these multinational firms are often viewed as apathetic to the needs of others, and that they care more about their bottom line.
But multinational companies are not the only things perceived poorly. Scientists were viewed as arrogant as well.
Ouch, it's hard not to take that personally.
But this public perception of GE crops has some weird exceptions. For instance, GE microbes were introduced to foods, and the reaction from the public was minimal.
Well, that just makes things more confusing. What's made the public go all Katy Perry on this topic?
Katy Perry? No need to bring your favorite pop princess into the conversation, Cleo.
Her song, Hot and Cold? No. Blank stares? Oh well. What makes the public have such hot and cold perceptions of the GE topic?
The debaters felt that the fault lies in the fact that relevant stakeholders, like universities and governments, have not created a coherent communication plan for delivering GE info to the public. Universities have certainly tried to improve their communication through various initiatives, but these initiatives vary from institution to institution, making the messages they're trying to send very inconsistent.
To fix this, there needs to be strong commitments from both public and private sectors to collaborate.
The debaters felt that ineffective communication also stems from a lack of understanding within the scientific community regarding the role that citizens' perceptions of risk and benefits play in overall acceptance, regardless of the accuracy of those perceptions.
That makes sense. If the public believes that the risks of GE crops outweigh the benefits, they're going to have negative sentiments about them.
But that can be more difficult if the public demands zero risk, because that's a completely unattainable goal.
There's nothing out there in the world that has zero risk involved. Go in the ocean, you could get eaten by sharks. Walk through a park, get struck by lightning. Get in your car, it could blow up.
Wow, things just got really morbid really fast.
You are literally only at zero risk if you lock yourself in a padded room all by yourself. Even then, I'm not ruling out spontaneous combustion.
Minus spontaneous combustion, I agree. Everything has a risk, but it's a question of how that risk is communicated to the public so that they understand.
So it sounds like the name of the game is communication and education.
Absolutely.
Publicly communicating credible scientific results, together with associated uncertainties, is a challenge best addressed by increasing science education and improving people's understanding of risk and uncertainty.
So, teaching the public that zero risk is impossible.
Exactly.
In addition to that, the debaters felt that science education needs to cover the topic of GE technology, and that it must train the public to have a critical eye for evidence and to understand credible science.
This could be accomplished through experiment-based, hands-on approaches that emphasize how important science is to how we live and eat. This could foster a love of science within the next generation.
Education doesn't just stop there, though. The debaters saw a lot of promise in the efforts of journalists themselves in becoming more informed on scientific issues.
I don't think we can rely simply on a more educated public, though.
You're right, and the debaters agreed with you. Public acceptance of GE technology requires addressing the lack of trust in both regulators and scientists. With scientists, this distrust is perpetuated by the inability to effectively communicate science to the media and to the public. For policymakers, they need to take the lead and understand the science and use that understanding to justify their position on the GE topic at hand.
Dr. Beachy agreed with this. He thought that political leaders, both elected and appointed, need to endorse sound, science-based recommendations concerning food and agriculture while acknowledging and facilitating the consumer's right to choose.
The debaters also felt that public advocates, like, say, Oprah, should use their positions to start candid discussions with the public.
Once this discussion on the safety of GE technology has begun between policymakers and the public, Dr. Beachy hopes that this will allow policymakers to use credible science to develop their policies on food safety and security.
Maybe then we'll be able to reach that global harmonization of regulations we mentioned earlier.
Maybe. Dr. Beachy sure hopes so.
There was one policy that was brought up specifically by the debaters in regards to scientific credibility, labeling.
Labeling? Scientifically credible? I thought that the whole argument was that it wasn't credible.
No, not in its current state. In fact, there are plenty of labels we use now that aren't scientifically credible.
Oh no, why do I not like the sound of this?
Take, for example, the label organic.
Yep, there it is. Definitely not liking the feeling of this.
Branding foods as organic really has only demonstrated the potential for increasing profit margins, and the label lacks any scientific support of perceived benefits attributable to organic methods.
So, organic is a lie. What does this have to do with GE crops?
Well, the idea that the debaters brought up was that if labeling was completely revamped to just relay scientifically credible information, it would be a lot more helpful. For example, one such label could read, "This GE crop had no organophosphates sprayed on it, making it more environmentally friendly."
So instead of assuming that organic means environmentally friendly, you would have a label that states that the food is environmentally friendly and then actually states why? Okay, that's something I can get behind.
I thought you would. I'm glad you hung in there.
And I'm sure it would have the added benefit of helping to change the public perspective on GE crops. Sure, they would have to be labeled, but it would be for the benefits they bring to the table, and not the perceived risk.
And all in all, we have to understand that we come from a place of privilege here. We have the ability to make an active choice of what we eat, where in some areas of the world, there might be no choice at all.
Good point. Both the debaters and Dr. Beachy agreed that at the end of the day, we need to use GE technology to feed the world. Because if we can't feed everyone today, What will happen in 2050 when the problem will reach a zenith?
And that's where we'll turn it over to you, listeners.
How can we teach the next generation about the not-so-scary science of GE? And how can we communicate with the current generation about what is true and what is not?
What are your thoughts on scientifically credible labeling? Is it a decent compromise in the great labeling debate?
Is it possible to get every country to team up and create harmonized regulations for GE crops and animals without causing World War III?
And after hearing this discussion, are you pro-GE food, or are you still skeptical of the technology? That's the biggie, in my opinion.
Tweet us at ISGP Forum with hashtag ISGP Forum and let us know your thoughts.
The Institute on Science for Global Policy looks forward to hearing from you.
Thank you for socializing with science today. We'll catch you next time right here on the forum.
The Institute on Science for Global Policy, or ISGP, is a nonprofit organization that convenes international meetings bringing together scientists, policymakers, industry leaders, students, and other stakeholders to discuss pertinent scientific issues facing society. The ISGP has no opinions and does not lobby. Therefore, the preceding podcast reflects the views expressed by the presenters and debaters at our conference. For more information, please visit our website at www.scienceforglobalpolicy.org. Thank you.